ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। We're continuing our reading of the Srimad Bhagavatam at Canto 6, Chapter 17, Mother Parvati Curses Chitraketu. We're taking up at text number 36. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, O King, after hearing this speech by her husband, the demigoddess Uma, the wife of Lord Shiva, gave up her astonishment at the behavior of King Chitraketu and became steady in intelligence. Purport, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur remarks that the word Shantati means Suya Purva Subhava Smritya. When Parvati remembered her former behavior in cursing Chitraketu, she became very much ashamed and covered her face with the skirt of her sari, admitting that she was wrong in cursing Chitraketu. The great devotee Chitraketu was so powerful that he was quite competent to curse Mother Parvati in retaliation, but instead of doing so, he very humbly accepted the curse and bowed his head before Lord Shiva and his wife. This is very much to be appreciated as the standard behavior of a Vaishnava. Purport, upon being informed by Lord Shiva, Mother Parvati could understand that she was wrong in cursing Chitraketu. King Chitraketu was so exalted in his character that in spite of being wrongly cursed by Parvati, he immediately descended from his airplane and bowed his head before the mother, accepting her curse. This has already been explained. Narayana Paraksarvena Kutashchana Pibyati. Chitraketu very sportingly felt that since the mother wanted to curse him, he could accept this curse just to please her. This is called Sadhu Lakshanam, the characteristic of a sadhu or a devotee. As explained by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Trinad api sunichena, Toror api sihishnuna. A devotee should always be very humble and meek and should offer all respects to others, especially to superiors. Being protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, a devotee is always powerful, but a devotee does not wish to show his power unnecessarily. However, when a less intelligent person has some power, he wants to use it for sense gratification. This is not the behavior of a devotee. 38. Being cursed by Mother Durga, Bhavani, the wife of Lord Shiva, that same Chitraketu accepted birth in a demoniac species of life. Although still fully equipped with transcendental knowledge and practical application of that knowledge in life, he appeared as a demon at the fire sacrifice performed by Choshta, and thus he became famous as Vritrasura. Purport, the word yoni is generally understood to mean jati, family, group, or species. Although Vritrasura appeared in a family of demons, it is clearly said that his knowledge of spiritual life still existed. Jnana vijnana samyukta. His spiritual knowledge and the practical application of that knowledge in life were not lost. Therefore, it is said that even if a devotee falls down for some reason, he is still not lost. Yatra kva babadram abhuda mushrikim kovarta apto bhajatam sutarmata. Once one is advanced in devotional service, his spiritual assets are never lost under any circumstances. Whatever spiritual advancement he has achieved continues. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Even if a bhakti yogi falls, he takes birth in a rich family or family of brahmanas, in which he again starts devotional activities from the point where he left off. Although Vritrasura was known as an asura or demon, he did not lose his consciousness of Krishna or devotional service. 39. My dear King Parikshit, you inquired from me how Vritrasura, a great devotee, took birth in a demoniac family. Thus, I have tried to explain to you everything about this. 40. Chitraketu was a great devotee, Mahatma. If one hears the story of Chitraketu from a pure devotee, the listener also is freed from the conditional life of material existence. Purport, the historical incidents in the Puranas, such as the history of Chitraketu, explained in the Bhagavata Purana, are sometimes misunderstood by outsiders or non-devotees. Therefore, Shukadeva Goswami advised that the history of Chitraketu be heard from a devotee. Anything about devotional service or the characteristics of the Lord and his devotees must be heard from a devotee, not from a professional reciter. This is advised herein. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's secretary also advised that one learn the history of Srimad Bhagavatam from a devotee. Yaha Bhagavata Pada Vaishnavirastani. One should not hear the statements of Srimad Bhagavatam from professional reciters, or else they will not be effective. Quoting from Padma Purana, Sri Sanatana Goswami has strictly forbidden us to hear about the activities of the Lord and his devotees from the mouths of non-devotees. Avaishnava mukon girnam putam harikatam ritam shravana naiva kartavyam sarpochishtam yatapaya. One should not hear anything about Krishna from a non-Vaishnava. Milk touched by the lips of a serpent has poisonous effects. Similarly, talks about Krishna given by a non-Vaishnava are also poisonous. One must be a bona fide devotee, and then he can preach and impress devotional service upon his listeners. 41. Saigo. One who rises from bed early in the morning and recites this history of Chitraketu, controlling his words and mind, and remembering the Supreme Personality of Godhead, will return home back to Godhead without difficulty. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 6th canto, 17th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Mother Parvati Curses Chitraketu. Owarimashita. Bravo. Bravissimo. Sadhu. Sadhu. Chapter 18, Diti vows to kill King Indra.
These heavenly planets are pretty heavy. You know, there's a lot of things going on, right? Correct. Text 1. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, Prishni, who was the wife of Savita, the fifth of the 12 sons of Aditi, gave birth to 3 daughters, Savitri, Vyariti, and Twayi, and the sons named Agnihotra, Pashu, Soma, Chaturmasya, and the 5 Mahayagyas. Text 2. O King, Siddhi, who was the wife of Bhaga, the 6th son of Aditi, bore 3 sons named Mahima, Bibhu, and Prabhu, and 1 extremely beautiful daughter whose name was Ashi. Prabhu. Text 3 and 4. Datta, the 7th son of Aditi, had 4 wives named Kuhu, Sinivali, Raka, and Anumati. These wives begot 4 sons named Sayam, Darsha, Pratak, and Purnamasa, respectively. The wife of Vidhata, the 8th son of Aditi, was named Kriya. In her, Vidhata begot the 5 fire gods named the Purishas. The wife of Varuna, the 9th son of Aditi, was named Charshani. Bhrigu, the son of Brahma, took birth again from her womb. In her womb, sorry. Oh, from her womb. From her womb. You don't take birth in the womb, you take birth from the womb. But we can't change anything, though. Right? Text 5. By the semen of Varuna, the great mystic Valmiki took birth from an anthill. Bhrigu and Valmiki were specific sons of Varuna, whereas Agastya and Vashishtha Rishis were the common sons of Varuna and Mitra, the 10th son of Aditi. There must be a whole story behind that one. Shall I keep going? Upon seeing Urvashi, excuse me.
I'm sorry.
Upon seeing Urvashi, the Celestial Society girl, both Mitra and Varuna discharged semen, which they preserved in an earthen pot. The two sons, Agastya and Vashishta, later appeared from that pot, and they are therefore the common sons of Mitra and Varuna. Mitra begot three sons in the womb of his wife, whose name was Revati. Their names were Utsarga, Arishta, and Pipala. Purport. Modern science is trying to generate living entities in test tubes by processing semen. But even long, long ago, it was possible for semen kept in a pot to develop into a child. Text 7. O King Parikshit, Indra, the king of the heavenly planets, an 11th son of Aditi, begot three sons named Jayanta, Rishabh, and Midusha, in the womb of his wife, Paulomi. Thus we have heard. Text 8. By his own potency, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has multifarious potencies, appeared in the form of a dwarf as Rukrama, the 12th son of Aditi. In the womb of his wife, whose name was Kirti, he begot one son named Brihatshloka, who had many sons, headed by Sobhaga. Purport. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 4:6, Ajopi san navyayatma bhutanam ishwaropi san prakritim swabhishtaya sambhavam yatma mayaya. Although I am unborn, and my transcendental body never deteriorates, and although I am the Lord of all sentient beings, I still appear in every millennium in my original transcendental form. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead incarnates, he does not need any help from the external energy, for he appears as he is by his own potency. The spiritual potency is also called Maya. It is said, Ato Maya Mayam Vishnum Pravaranti Manishinaha. The body accepted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead is called Maya Maya. This does not mean that he is formed of the external energy. This Maya refers to his internal potency. Later, in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, I shall describe how Urukrama, Lord Vamanadeva, appeared as the son of the great sage Kashyapa, and how he covered the three worlds with three steps. I shall describe the uncommon activities he performed, his qualities, his power, and how he took birth from the womb of Aditi. Text 10. Now let me describe the sons of Diti, who were begotten by Kashyapa, but who became demons. In this demoniac family, the great devotee Prahlad Maharaj appeared, and Bali Maharaj also appeared in that family. The demons are technically known as Daityas, because they proceeded from the womb of Diti. Text 11. First, the two sons named Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha took birth from Diti's womb. Both of them were very powerful and were worshipped by the Daityas and Danavas. The wife of Hiranyakashipu was known as Kayadu. She was the daughter of Jamba and a descendant of Danu. She gave birth to four consecutive sons, known as Shamlada, Anulada, Lada, and Pralada. The sister of these four sons was known as Singika. She married the demon named Viprachit and gave birth to another demon named Rahu. 14. While Rahu in disguise was drinking nectar among the demigods, the Supreme Personality of Godhead severed his head. The wife of Sanglada was named Kriti. By union with Samlada, Kriti gave birth to a son named Panchajana. Text 15. The wife of Lada was named Damini. She gave birth to two sons named Vatapi and Ilvala. When Agastya Muni became Ilvala's when Agastya Muni became Ilvala's guest, Ilvala served him a feast by cooking vatapi. Excuse me. When Agastya Muni became Ilvala's guest, Ilvala served him a feast by cooking vatapi, who was in the shape of a ram.
Sages, and then after the sage would eat something, then he would say to his brother, he would say, Vatapi, come out now. And Vatapi would reconstitute himself as a normal human being, and he'd rip open the sage. That's how they killed sages. Until they met Agastya. And then Agastya, you know, who swallowed the whole Ganga and everything like that, they did it to Agastya, and he said, too late, I already digested him. 16. The wife of Anulada was named Surya. She gave birth to two sons named Bashkala and Mahisha. Prahlada had one son, Virochana, whose wife gave birth to Bali Maharaj. Thereafter, Bali Maharaj begot 100 sons in the womb of Ashana. One of these 100 sons, King Bana was the eldest. The activities of Bali Maharaj, which are very laudable, will be described later in the 8th canto. Since King Bana was a great worshipper of Lord Shiva, he became one of Lord Shiva's most celebrated associates. Even now, Lord Shiva protects King Bana's capital and always stands beside him. The 49 Marut demigods, who were also born from the womb of Diti, The 49 Marut demigods were also born from the womb of Diti. None of them had sons, although they were born of Diti. King Indra gave them a position as demigods. Purport. Apparently, even demons can be elevated to positions as demigods when their atheistic character is reformed. There are two kinds of men throughout the universe. Those who are devotees of Lord Vishnu are called demigods, and those who are just the opposite are called demons. Even the demons can be transformed into demigods, as the statement of this verse proves. 20. King Parikshit inquired, My dear Lord, due to their birth, the 49 Maruts must have been obsessed with a demoniac mentality. Why did Indra, the king of heaven, convert them into demigods? Did they perform any rituals or pious activities? My dear Brahmana, I and all the sages present with me are eager to know about this. Therefore, O great soul, kindly explain to us the reason. Sri Suta Goswami said, O great king, O great sage Shaunaka, after hearing Maharaj Parikshit speak respectfully and briefly on topics essential to hear, Shukadeva Goswami, who is well aware of everything, praised his endeavor with great pleasure and replied. Purport. King Parikshit's question was very much appreciated by Shukadeva Goswami because although it was composed of a smaller number of words, it contained meaningful inquiries about how the sons of Diti, although born as demons, became demigods. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura stresses that even though Diti was very envious, her heart was purified because of a devotional attitude. Another significant topic is that although Kashyapa Muni was a learned scholar and was advanced in spiritual consciousness, he nonetheless fell a victim to the inducement of his beautiful wife. All these questions were posed in a small number of words, and therefore Shukadeva Goswami very much appreciated Maharaj Parikshit's inquiry. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, just to help Indra, Lord Vishnu killed the two brothers Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. Because of their being killed, their mother Diti, overwhelmed with lamentation and anger, contemplated as follows. Lord Indra, who is very much fond of sense gratification, has killed the two brothers Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu by means of Lord Vishnu. Therefore, Indra is cruel, hard-hearted, and sinful. When will I, having killed him, rest with a peaceful mind? When dead, the bodies of all the rulers known as kings and great leaders will be transformed into worms, stool, or ashes. If one enviously kills others for the protection of such a body, does he actually know the true interest of life?
Certainly he does not. For if one is envious of other entities, he surely goes to hell. Purport, the material body, even if possessed by a great king, is ultimately transformed into stool, worms, or ashes. When one is too attached to the bodily conception of life, he is certainly not very intelligent. Ditti thought, Indra considers his body eternal, and thus he has become unrestrained. I therefore wish to have a son who can remove Indra's madness. Let me adopt some means to help me in this. Purport, one who is in the bodily conception of life is compared to the in the Shastras to animals like cows and asses. Ditti wanted to punish Indra, who had become like a lower animal. Thinking in this way, with a desire for a son to kill Indra, Ditti began constantly acting to satisfy Kashyapa by her pleasing behavior. O king, Ditti always carried out Kashyapa's orders very faithfully as he desired. With service, love, humility, and control, with words spoken very sweetly to satisfy her husband, and with smiles and glances at him, Ditti attracted his mind and brought it under her control. Purport, when a woman wants to endear herself to her husband and make him very faithful, she must try to please him in all respects. When the husband is pleased with the wife can receive all necessities, ornaments, and full satisfaction for her senses. Herein, this is indicated by the behavior of Ditti. 29. Although Kashyapa Muni was a learned scholar, he was captivated by Ditti's artificial behavior, which brought him under her control. Therefore, he assured his wife that he would fulfill her desires. Such a promise by a husband is not at all astonishing. 30. In the beginning of creation, Lord Brahma, the father of the living entities of the universe, saw that all the living entities were unattached. To increase population, he then created woman from the better half of man's body, for women's behavior carries away a man's mind. Purport, this entire universe is going on under the spell of sexual attachment, which was created by Lord Brahma to increase the population of the entire universe, not only in human society but also in other species. As stated by Rishabhadeva in the fifth canto, Pumsa Striya Mitanibhavam Itam, the entire world is going on under the spell of sexual attraction and desire between man and woman. When man and woman unite, the hard knot of this attraction becomes increasingly tight, and thus a man is implicated in the materialistic way of life. This is the illusion of the material world. This illusion acted upon Kashyapa Muni, although he was very learned and advanced in spiritual knowledge. As stated in the Manu Samhita and Srimad Bhagavatam, Matra Swasra Duhitrava Nava Viktasa Nobhavet Vallavan Indriya Gramo Vidvamsam Abhikarshati. A man should not associate with a woman in a solitary place, not even with his mother, sister, or daughter, for the senses are so strong that they lead astray even a person advanced in knowledge. When a man remains in a solitary place with a woman, his sexual desires undoubtedly increase. Therefore, the words ekanta bhutani, which are used here, indicate that to avoid sexual desires, one should avoid the company of women as far as possible. Sexual desire is so powerful that one is saturated with it if he stays in a solitary place with any woman, even his mother, sister, or daughter.
Oh, my dear one, the most powerful sage, Kashyapa, being extremely pleased by the mild behavior of his wife, Ditti, smiled and spoke to her as follows. Kashyapa Muni said, Oh, beautiful woman, oh, irreproachable lady, since I am very much pleased by your behavior, you may ask me for any benediction you want. If a husband is pleased, what desires are difficult for his wife to obtain, either in this world or in the next? A husband is the supreme demigod for a woman. The supreme personality of Godhead, Lord Vasudeva, the husband of the goddess of fortune, is situated in everyone's heart and is worshipped through the various names and forms of the demigods by fruitive workers. Similarly, a husband represents the Lord as the object of worship for a woman. Purport. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 9:23, Whatever a man may sacrifice to other gods, O son of Kunti, is really meant for me alone, but it is offered without true understanding. The demigods are various assistants who act like the hands and legs of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One who is not in direct touch with the Supreme Lord and cannot conceive of the exalted position of the Lord is sometimes advised to worship the demigods as various parts of the Lord. If women, who are usually very much attached to their husbands, worship their husbands as representatives of Vasudeva, the women benefit, just as Ajamil benefited by calling for Narayana, his son. Ajamil was concerned with his son, but because of his attachment to the name of Narayana, he attained salvation simply by chanting that name. In India, a husband is still called Patiguru, the husband spiritual master. If husband and wife are attached to one another for advancement in Krishna consciousness, their relationship of cooperation is very effective for such advancement. Although the names of Indra and Agni are sometimes uttered in the Vedic mantras, Indraya Swaha, Agnaya Swaha, the Vedic sacrifices are actually performed for the satisfaction of Lord Vishnu. As long as one is very much attached to material sense gratification, the worship of the demigods or the worship of one's husband is recommended. Text 35. My dear wife, whose body is so beautiful, your waist being thin, a conscientious wife should be chaste and should abide by the orders of her husband. She should very devoutly worship her husband as a representative of Vasudeva.
My dear gentle wife, because you have worshipped me with great devotion, considering me a representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I shall reward you with you by fulfilling your desires, which are unobtainable for an unchaste wife. Diti replied, O my husband, O great soul, I have now lost my sons. If you want to give me a benediction, I ask you for an immortal son who can kill Indra. I pray for this because Indra, with the help of Vishnu, has killed my two sons, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. Purport, the word Indrahanam means one who can kill Indra, but it also means one who follows Indra. The word Amrityum refers to the demigods who do not die like ordinary human beings because they have extremely long durations of life. For example, the duration of Lord Brahma's life is stated in Bhagavad Gita, Sahasra Yuga Paryantam Arhadya Brahmano Vidu. Even the duration of one day or 12 hours of Brahma is 4,300,000 years multiplied by 1,000. Thus, the duration of his life is inconceivable for an ordinary human being. The demigods are therefore sometimes called Amara, which means one who has no death. In this material world, however, everyone has to die. Therefore, the word Amrityum indicates that Diti wanted a son who would be equal in status to the demigods. Upon hearing Diti's request, Kashyapa Muni was very much aggrieved. Alas, he lamented, now I face the danger of the impious act of killing Indra. Although Kashyapa Muni was eager to fulfill the desire of his wife Diti, when he heard that she wanted a son to kill Indra, his jubilation was immediately reduced to nothing, because he was averse to the idea. Kashyapa Muni thought, alas, I have now become too attached to material enjoyment. Taking advantage of this, my mind has been attracted by the illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of a woman, my wife. Therefore, I am surely a wretched person who will glide down toward hell. This woman, my wife, has adopted a means that follows her nature, and therefore she is not to be blamed. But I am a man, therefore all condemnation upon me. I am not at all conversant with what is good for me, since I could not control my senses.
Purport, the natural instinct of a woman is to enjoy the material world. She induces her husband to enjoy this world by satisfying his tongue, belly, and genitals, which are called jihwa, udara, and upasta. A woman is expert in cooking palatable dishes so that she can easily satisfy her husband in eating. When one eats nicely, his belly is satisfied, and as soon as the belly is satisfied, the genitals become strong. Especially when a man is accustomed to eating meat and drinking wine and similar passionate things, he certainly becomes sexually inclined. It should be understood that sexual inclinations are meant not for spiritual progress, but for gliding down to hell. Thus, Kashyapa Muni considered his situation and lamented. In other words, to be a householder is very risky unless one is trained and the wife is a follower of her husband. A husband should be trained at the very beginning of life. Kumara acharit pragnyo dharman bhagavatam iha. During the time of brahmacharya or student life, a brahmacharya should be taught to be expert in Bhagavad Dharma, devotional service. Then when he marries, if his wife is faithful to her husband and follows him in such life, the relationship between husband and wife is very desirable. However, a relationship between husband and wife without spiritual consciousness but strictly for sense gratification is not at all good. It is said in Srimad Bhagavatam 12.2.3 that especially in this age, Kali Yuga, Dampatye Biruchir Hetu, the relationship between husband and wife will be based on sexual power. Therefore, householder life in this Kali Yuga is extremely dangerous unless both the wife and husband take to Krishna consciousness.
41. A woman's face is as attractive and beautiful as a blossoming lotus flower during autumn. Her words are very sweet, and they give pleasure to the ear. But if we study a woman's heart, we can understand it to be extremely sharp, like the blade of a razor. In these circumstances, who would understand, who could understand the dealings of a woman? Purport. Woman is now depicted very well from the materialistic point of view by Kashyapa Muni. Women are generally known as the fair sex, and especially in youth, at the age of 16 or 17, women are very attractive to men. Therefore, a woman's face is compared to a blooming lotus flower in autumn. Just as a lotus is extremely beautiful in autumn, a woman at the threshold of youthful beauty is extremely attractive. In Sanskrit, a woman's voice is called Nadi Swara, because women generally sing, and their singing is very attractive. At the present moment, cinema artists, especially female singers, are especially welcome. Some of them earn fabulous amounts of money simply by singing. Therefore, as taught by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, a woman's singing is dangerous because it can make a sannyasi fall a victim to the woman. Sannyas means giving up the company of women. But if a sannyasi hears the voice of a woman and sees her beautiful face, he certainly becomes attracted and is sure to fall down. There have been many examples. Even the great sage Vishwamrita fell a victim to Menaka. Therefore, a person desiring to advance in spiritual consciousness must be especially careful not to see a woman's face or hear a woman's voice. To see a woman's face and appreciate its beauty, or to hear a woman's voice and appreciate her singing, is very nice, is a subtle fall down for a brahmachari or sannyasi. Thus, the description of a woman's features by Kashyapa Muni is very instructive. When a woman's bodily features are attractive, when her face is beautiful and when her voice is sweet, she is naturally a trap for a man. The Shastras advise that when such a woman comes to serve a man, she should be considered to be like a dark well covered by grass. In the fields, there are many such wells, and a man who does not know about them drops through the grass and falls down. There are many such instructions. Thus, there are many such instructions. Since the attraction of the material world is based on attraction for women, Kashyapa Muni thought, under the circumstances, who can understand the heart of a woman? Chanakya Pandit has also advised, Vishwasu naiva kartavya Trishu Raja Kuleshu Cha. There are two persons one should not trust, a politician and a woman. These, of course, are authoritative Shastric injunctions, and we should therefore be very careful in our dealings with women. Sometimes our Krishna consciousness movement is criticized for mingling men and women, but Krishna consciousness is meant for everyone. Whether one is a man or a woman does not matter. Lord Krishna personally says, Triyo Vaishyas Tata Shudras Te Piyanti Param Gatim. Whether one is a woman, Shudra or Vaishya, not to speak of being a Brahmana or Kshatriya, everyone is fit to return home, back to Godhead. If he strictly follows the instructions of the spiritual master and Shastra, we therefore request all the members of the Krishna consciousness movement, both men and women, not to be attracted by bodily features, but only to be attracted by Krishna. Hari Bol. Then everything will be all right. Otherwise, there will be danger. 42. To satisfy their own interests, women deal with men as if the men were most dear to them, but no one is actually dear to them. Women are supposed to be very saintly, but for their own interests, they can kill even their husbands, sons, or brothers, or cause them to be killed by others. Purport. A woman's nature has been particularly well studied by Kashyapa Muni. Women are self-interested by nature, and therefore they should be protected by all means, so that their natural inclination to be too self-interested will not be manifested. Women need to be protected by men. A woman should be cared for by her father in her childhood, by her husband in her youth, and by her grown sons in her old age. This is the injunction of Manu, who says that a woman should not be given independence at any stage. Women must be cared for so that they will not be free to manifest their natural tendency for gross selfishness. There have been many cases, even in the present day, in which women have killed their husbands to take advantage of their insurance policies. This is not a criticism of women, but a practical study of their nature. Such natural instincts of a woman or man are manifested only in the bodily conception of life. When either a man or a woman is advanced in spiritual consciousness, the bodily conception of life practically vanishes. We should see all women as spiritual units, aham brahmasmi, whose only duty is to satisfy Krishna. Then the influences of the different modes of material nature, which result from one's possessing a material body, will not act. The Krishna consciousness movement is so beneficial that it can very easily counteract the contamination of material nature, which results from one's possessing a material body. Bhagavad Gita therefore teaches in the very beginning that whether one is a man or a woman, one must know that he or she is not the body, but a spiritual soul. Everyone should be interested in the activities of the spirit soul, not the body. As long as one is activated by the bodily conception of life, there is always the danger of being misled, whether one is a man or a woman. The soul is sometimes described as Purusha, because whether one is dressed as a man or a woman, one is inclined to enjoy this material world. One who has this spirit of enjoyment is described as Purusha. Whether one is a man or a woman, he is not interested in serving others. Everyone is interested in satisfying his or her own senses. Krishna consciousness, however, provides first-class training for a man or a woman. A man should be trained to be a first-class devotee of Lord Krishna, and a woman should be trained to be a very chaste follower of her husband. That will make the lives of both of them happy. Text 43. I promised to give her a benediction, and this promise cannot be violated. But Indra does not deserve to be killed. In these circumstances, the solution I have is quite suitable. purport. Kashyapa Muni concluded, Diti is eager to have a son who can kill Indra. Since she is a woman after all and is not very intelligent, I shall train her in such a way that instead of always thinking of how to kill Indra, she will be Vaishnava. If she agrees to follow the rules and regulations of the Vaishnava principles, the unclean core of her heart will certainly be cleansed. Cheto darpanam arjanam. This is the process of devotional service. Anyone can be purified by following the principles of devotional service in Krishna consciousness. For Krishna consciousness is so powerful that it can purify even the dirtiest class of men and transform them into the topmost Vaishnavas. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement aims at this purpose. Narottam Das Thakur says, Vrajendra Nandana Ye Chisutta Hoyla Se Balaram Hayla Nitai Dinahina Yatta Chila Harinama Udarila Tarasakshi Jagai Madai. The appearance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in this Kali Yuga is especially meant to deliver the fallen souls who are always planning something for material enjoyment. He gave the people of this age the advantage of being able to chant the Hare Krishna mantra and thus become fully pure, free from material contamination. Once one becomes a pure Vaishnava, he transcends all material conceptions of life. Thus, Kashyapa Muni tried to transform his wife into a Vaishnavi so that she might give up the idea of killing Indra. He wanted both her and her sons to be purified so that they would be fit to become pure Vaishnavas. Of course, sometimes a practitioner deviates from the Vaishnava principles, and there is a chance that he may fall down. But Kashyapa Muni thought that even if one falls while practicing the Vaishnava principles, he is still not a loser. Even a fallen Vaishnava is eligible for better results, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Svalpamapya Siddharmasya Trayate Mahatobayat. Even practicing the Vaishnava principles to a small extent can save one from the greatest danger of material existence. Thus, Kashyapa Muni planned to instruct his wife, Diti, to become a Vaishnava because he wanted to save the life of Indra. Text 44. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, Kashyapa Muni, thinking in this way, became somewhat angry. Condemning himself, O Maharaj Parikshit, descendant of Kuru, he spoke to Diti as follows.
It's just these purports are quite heavy on women, and in the previous chapter also Prabhupada was saying that the opinion of a woman should be given less importance than the opinion of a man, and now we're hearing all these things, and the heart of a woman is like a razor, and two things. One of them is to actually understand what Prabhupada means by this. And the other thing is how to present it in a way that is not controversial.
Ha ha. Well, first thing is the premise of your statement that this is heavy on women, I would adjust slightly. I would say it's heavy on people who think they're women. That's how Prabhupada adjusted the whole conversation at the end, because that's the tricky part, is that nobody's a woman. They're all called, every soul's called Purusha when that soul is in the body of a man or a woman and has the impetus to enjoy and a desire to exploit the material nature. Then they're called Purusha, and it doesn't matter if they're in the woman's form or a man's form. However, it's inescapable, and it's actually a disservice in one way to try to overlook the natural propensities that are there within various
species and also within human beings, man or woman, there is a particular nature. That's the whole premise of the Varnashrama system, that everyone has a particular nature. And if you don't address it properly and you simply try to merge it in and say everyone's the same, then you don't give full facility to people to act according to their nature, and then they can't be as productive as they normally would have been. So I guess my answer would be the first point, as far as how to present it, is that one can go immediately to the fact that we're not our bodies. And that's something that came up earlier also, that we're not dealing, we're talking about not the eternal living entity, but a living entity who happens to be in a particular body.
I think this reinforces the point I was making earlier about how this idea that we're not the body is stressed in so many different places, all the way through the Bhagavatam, from beginning to end, in the Bhagavad Gita also. And it being the last instruction that Shukadeva Goswami gave, how important is it? It's, if one can't accept that, then you can't be a Vaishnava. And therefore, Kashyapa's whole point was, and I think this is a very important point to focus on, that his solution was, make her a Vaishnavi, and then she won't think like that. So that automatically means a Vaishnavi doesn't think like that, period. That's the solution, you know? And if someone can't accept that, or whatever, then we need to, this is my humble opinion, this isn't from Shastra, this is just my experience and opinion speaking. When you speak to men or women, young or old, and you explain it properly, and you find the persons who actually can accept it and respond properly, then invest your energy there and make them Vaishnavas and Vaishnavis and build from there, and then you will have an example for others to follow. And any other thing to try to do, you know, it's just going to make it more and more complicated and make more and more fires to put out. And that's my opinion.
Kashyapa Muni. Okay.
That was one question.
You might as well give him the mic, because otherwise no one can hear.
We're supposed to see through the eyes of the Bhagavatam. And you know, there is other purpose where Prabhupada says that women are soft-hearted, simple, you know, so we have two perspectives, but it's hard for me to understand that the heart of a woman is like a razor. We don't have experience of it to some extent, but, you know, that, you know.
Yeah, we have a little experience about it. The face is very beautiful, but then there's this, I mean, any living entity who wants to exploit the material nature, there's going to be some cutting there. And then when you're dealing with man and woman, you're especially vulnerable. And that's material nature's arrangement. So that's why it's being pointed out here for our edification, so we don't get creamed. Because otherwise you lead with your chin and you'll just get knocked out.
That's how I understand it. So from the perspective, if someone, the more one is prone to sense gratification, the more his heart is like a razor blade. And nowadays, men and women is kind of, you know, men are so sensual also, or not?
Yeah, that's a problem. The Kali Yuga, Prayanal Payushashabhya Kalvasmi Nugajana, Manda Samanda Matayo, Manda Bhagya Hipadrata.
I was just listening yesterday to a very important series of room conversations that Prabhupada had with his leading GBC men in 1975 in Mayapur. And they were asking him all kinds of questions. This was the first major GBC meeting, and it was being organized in that year.
and they were asking him all kinds of different questions. And they asked him this question about how human society could be changed, you know, and how can we do this? Give us instructions how to do this. And Prabhupada's first response was, don't think that the world is going to become Krishna conscious like that. He said, most people will not be able to, but just, and this is how I've kind of, one of the reasons why I'm kind of on this point lately, because I've heard it a lot from Prabhupada, and that is that, you know, put your energy where you're going to get, anyway, I'm getting a little off the point. Then they said, well, can we influence the leaders and in that way change the situation? And Prabhupada said, yes, if your preaching is strong and you don't compromise. So I think that's the issue. If our preaching is strong and we don't compromise, and we ourselves follow and teach the persons who are following us to follow, then we will create an atmosphere which will be more and more attractive, you know, as the polemics get so heavy and young people, men and women, they will be attracted and they'll be able to hear the reality, the truth, and come under the protection of the instructions of the Bhagavatam, Krishna.
Okay. Kashyapa Muni said, my dear gentle wife, if you follow my instructions regarding this vow for at least 1 year, you will surely get a son who will be able to kill Indra. However, if you deviate from this vow of following the Vaishnava principles, you will get a son who will be favorable to Indra. Purport, the word Indraha refers to an asura who is always eager to kill Indra. An enemy of Indra is naturally a friend to the asuras, but the word Indraha also refers to one who follows Indra or who is obedient to him. When one becomes a devotee of Indra, he is certainly a friend to the demigods. Thus, the words Indra Ha Deva Bandavaha are equivocal. For they say, your son will kill Indra, but he will be very friendly to the demigods. If a person actually became a friend of the demigods, he certainly would not be able to kill Indra. I didn't ask for you. Thanks. I really appreciate that. That's a New Zealand accent. Diti replied, my dear Brahmana, I must accept your advice and follow the vow. Now let me understand what I have to do, what is forbidden, and what will not break the vow. Please clearly state all this to me. Purport. As stated above, a woman is generally inclined to serve her own purposes. Kashyapa Muni proposed to train Diti to fulfill her desires within 1 year, and since she was eager to kill Indra, she immediately agreed, saying, please let me know what the vow is and how I have to follow it. I promise that I shall do the needful and not break the vow. This is another side of a woman's psychology. Even though a woman is very fond of fulfilling her own plans, when someone instructs her, especially her husband, she innocently follows, and thus she can be trained for better purposes. By nature, a woman wants to be a follower of a man. Therefore, if a man is good, the woman can be trained for a good purpose. Kashyapa Muni said, my dear wife, to follow this vow, do not be violent or cause harm to anyone. Do not curse anyone and do not speak lies. Do not cut your nails and hair and do not touch impure things like skulls and bones. Purport, Kashyapa Muni's first instruction to his wife was not to be envious. The general tendency of anyone within this material world is to be envious, and therefore, to become a Krishna-conscious person, one must curb this tendency, as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam Paramo Nimat Saranam. A Krishna-conscious person is always non-envious, whereas others are always envious. Thus, Kashyapa Muni's instruction that his wife not be envious indicates that this is the first stage of advancement in Krishna-consciousness. Kashyapa Muni desired to train his wife to be a Krishna-conscious person, for this would suffice to protect both her and Indra. Kashyapa Muni continued, my dear gentle wife, never enter the water while bathing, never be angry, and do not even speak or associate with wicked people. never wear clothes that have not been properly washed, and do not put on a garland that has already been worn. Never eat leftover food, never eat prasad offered to the goddess Kali, Durga, and do not eat anything contaminated by flesh or fish. Do not eat anything brought or touched by a shudra, nor anything seen by a woman in her menstrual period. Do not drink water by joining your palms. Purport. Generally, the goddess Kali is offered food containing meat and fish, and therefore Kashyapa Muni strictly forbade his wife to take the remnants of such food. Actually, a Vaishnava is not allowed to take any food offered to the demigods. A Vaishnava is always fixed in accepting prasada offered to Lord Vishnu. Through all these instructions, Kashyapa in a negative way instructed his wife Diti how to become a Vaishnavi. After eating, you should not go out to the street without having washed your mouth, hands, and feet. You should not go out in the evening or with your hair loose, nor should you go out unless you are properly decorated with ornaments. You should not leave the house unless you are very grave and sufficiently covered. Purport. Kashyapa Muni advised his wife not to go out onto the street unless she was well decorated and well dressed. He did not encourage the miniskirts that have now become fashionable. In Oriental civilization, when a woman goes out onto the street, she must be fully covered so that no man will recognize who she is. All these methods are to be accepted for purification. If one takes to Krishna consciousness, one is fully purified, and thus one remains always transcendental to the contamination of the material world.
51. You should not lie down without having washed both your feet or without being purified, nor with wet feet or with your head pointed west or north. You should not lie naked or with other women or during the sunrise or sunset.
That a Krishna conscious person is always non-envious. One must curb this tendency, right? Now, either somebody is eccentric or the other one is a bully. Those defects are going to disappear as much as we purify our heart. Then what does it mean to curb? Is to make to be conscious of what we're doing and where we're falling in order to avoid it? Is that the idea?
Yeah. The Shastra says, yasyasti bhaktir bhagavatiya kinchana, etc., that by performing Krishna consciousness we naturally develop all the good qualities of the demigods. It doesn't mean that we don't endeavor for those at the same time. Otherwise, by the same logic, you just say that you don't need to take a shower either or take care of your body because it'll all just be done by Krishna. We have to make the effort, especially to curb those particular urges and tendencies that are displeasing to Krishna.
And in context, because Diti wanted to do something that wasn't, then he's saying curb that tendency. So in other words, we're in the material world, like Prabhu's saying, you know, we have these tendencies, so even if they're not completely purified, we need to curb them when they're there. Putting on washed clothing, being always pure, and being adorned with turmeric, sandalwood pulp, and other auspicious items. Before breakfast, one should worship the cows, the brahmanas, the goddess of fortune, and the supreme personality of Godhead. Purport. If one is trained to honor and worship the cows and brahmanas, he is actually civilized. The worship of the Supreme Lord is recommended, and the Lord is very fond of the cows and brahmanas. Namo brahmanya devaya go brahmani hitaya cha. In other words, a civilization in which there is no respect for the cows and brahmanas
is condemned. One cannot become spiritually advanced without acquiring the brahminical qualifications and giving protection to cows. Cow protection ensures sufficient food prepared with milk, which is needed for an advanced civilization. One should not pollute civilization by eating the flesh of cows. A civilization must do something progressive, and then it is an Aryan civilization. Instead of killing the cow to eat flesh, civilized men must prepare various milk products that will enhance the condition of society. If one follows the Brahminical culture, he will become competent in Krishna consciousness. 53. With flower garlands, sandalwood pulp, ornaments, and other paraphernalia, a woman following this vow should worship women who have sons and whose husbands are living. The pregnant wife should worship her husband and offer him prayers. She should meditate upon him, thinking that he is situated in her womb. Whoa. The child in the womb is a part of the husband's body. Therefore, the husband, through his representative, indirectly remains within the womb of his pregnant wife. Text 54. Kashyapa Muni continued, "If you perform this ceremony, called Pungsavana, adhering to the vow with faith for at least 1 year, you will give birth to a son destined to kill Indra. But if there is any discrepancy in the discharge of this vow, the son will be a friend to Indra." 55. O King Parikshit, Diti, the wife of Kashyapa, agreed to undergo the purificatory process known as Pungsavana. "Yes," she said, "I shall do everything according to your instructions." With great jubilation, she became pregnant, having taken semen from Kashyapa, and faithfully began discharging the vow.
O King, who are respectful to everyone, Indra understood Diti's purpose, and thus he contrived to fulfill his own interests. Following the logic that self-preservation is the first law of nature, he wanted to break Diti's promise. Thus he engaged himself in the service of Diti, his aunt, who was residing in an ashrama. Indra served his aunt daily by bringing flowers, fruits, roots, and wood for yajñas from the forest. He also brought kusha grass, leaves, sprouts, earth, and water exactly at the proper time. O King Parikshit, as the hunter of a deer becomes like a deer by covering his body with deer skin and serving the deer, so Indra, although at heart the enemy of the sons of Diti, became outwardly friendly and served Diti in a faithful way. Indra's purpose was to cheat Diti as soon as he could find some fault in the way she discharged the vows of the ritualistic ceremony. However, he wanted to be undetected, and therefore he served her very carefully. O Master of the entire world, when Indra could find no faults, he thought, "How will there be good fortune for me?" Thus he was full of deep anxiety. Having grown weak and thin because of strictly following the principles of the vow, Diti once unfortunately neglected to wash her mouth, hands, and feet after eating and went to sleep during the evening twilight. Oops.
61. Finding this fault, Indra, who has all the mystic powers, the yoga siddhis, such as anima and lagima, entered Diti's womb while she was unconscious, being fast asleep. Purport. A perfectly successful yogi is expert in 8 kinds of perfection. By one of them, called anima siddhi, he can become smaller than an atom, and in that state, he can enter anywhere. With this yogic power, Indra entered the womb of Diti while she was pregnant. Text 62. After entering Diti's womb, Indra, with the help of his thunderbolt, cut into 7 pieces her embryo, which appeared like glowing gold. In 7 places, 7 different living beings began crying. Indra told them, do not cry. And then he cut each of them into seven pieces again. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks that Indra, by his yogic power, first expanded the body of one Marut into seven, and then when he cut each of the seven parts of the original body into pieces, there were 49. When each body was cut into seven, other living entities entered the new bodies, and thus they were like plants, which became separate entities when cut into various parts and planted on a hill. The first body was one, and then it was cut into many pieces. And when it was cut into many pieces, many other living entities entered the new bodies. O king, being very much aggrieved, they pleaded to Indra with folded hands, saying, dear Indra, we are the Maruts, your brothers. Why are you trying to kill us? 64. When Indra saw that actually they were his devoted followers, he said to them, if you were all my brothers, you have nothing more to fear from me. 65. Shukadeva Goswami said, my dear King Parikshit, you were burned by the Brahmastra of Ashwatthama, but when Lord Krishna entered the womb of your mother, you were saved. Similarly, although the one embryo was cut into 49 pieces by the thunderbolt of Indra, they were all saved by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of God.
If one worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original person, even once, he receives the benefit of being promoted to the spiritual world and possessing the same bodily features as Vishnu. Diti worshipped Lord Vishnu for almost 1 year, adhering to a great vow. Because of such strength in spiritual life, the 49 Maruts were born. How then is it wonderful that the Maruts, although born in the womb of Diti, became equal to the demigods by the mercy of the Supreme Lord? How then is it wonderful that the Maruts, although born from the womb of Diti, became equal to the demigods by the mercy of the Supreme Lord? Because of worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Diti was completely purified. When she got up from bed, she saw her 49 sons along with Indra. These 49 sons were all as brilliant as fire and were in friendship with Indra, and therefore she was very pleased. Thereafter, Diti said to Indra, my dear son, I adhered to this difficult vow just to get a son to kill you, 12 Adityas. I prayed for only one son, but now I see that there are 49. How has this happened? My dear son Indra, if you know, please tell me the truth. Do not try to speak lies.
Indra replied, my dear mother, because I was grossly blinded by selfish interests, I lost sight of religion. When I understood that you were observing a great vow in spiritual life, I wanted to find some fault in you. When I found such a fault, I entered your womb and cut the embryo to pieces. Purport. When Diti, Indra's aunt, explained to Indra without reservations what she had wanted to do, Indra explained his intentions to her. Thus both of them, instead of being enemies, freely spoke the truth. This is the qualification that results from contact with Vishnu. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 5.18.12, Yasya Sibha Bhagavatya Kinchana Sarvaya Gunaistattva Samasate Suraha. If one develops a devotional attitude and becomes purified by worshipping the Supreme Lord, all the good qualities are certainly manifested in his body. Because of being touched by worship of Vishnu, both Diti and Indra
were purified. 72. First, I cut the child in the womb into seven pieces, which became seven children. Then I cut each of the children into seven pieces again. By the grace of the Supreme Lord, however, none of them died. 73. My dear mother, when I saw that all 49 sons were alive, I was certainly struck with wonder. I decided that this was a secondary result of your having regularly executed devotional service in worship of Lord Vishnu. Purport. For one who engages in worshiping Lord Vishnu, nothing is very wonderful. This is a fact. In Bhagavad Gita it is said, 1878, Yatra Yogeshwara Krishno Yatra Parto Danur Dadaha Tatra Shira Jidyo Bhutir Dhruva Nitir Matir Mama. Wherever there is Krishna, the master of all mystics, and wherever there is Arjuna, the supreme archer, there will also certainly be opulence, victory, extraordinary power, and morality. That is my opinion. Yogeshwara is the supreme personality of Godhead, the master of all mystic yoga, who can do anything and everything he likes. This is the omnipotence of the Supreme Lord. For one who pleases the Supreme Lord, no achievement is wonderful. Everything is possible for him. 74. Although those who are interested only in worshiping the Supreme Personality of Godhead do not desire anything material from the Lord and do not even want liberation, Lord Krishna fulfills all their desires. Purport. When Dhruva Maharaj saw Lord Vishnu, he declined to take any benedictions from him, for he was fully satisfied by seeing the Lord. Nonetheless, the Lord is so kind that because Dhruva Maharaj in the beginning had desired a kingdom greater than his father's, he was promoted to Dhruvaloka, the best planet in the universe. Therefore, in the Shastras, it is said, Akama kama kamova, akama sarva kamova, moksha kama udadadihi, tivrena bhakti yogena, yajeta purusham padam. A person who has broader intelligence, whether he is full of material desires, free from material desires, or desiring liberation, must by all means worship the Supreme Whole, the Personality of Godhead. Bhagavatam 2.3.10. One should engage in full devotional service. Then, even though he has no desires, whatever desires he previously had can all be fulfilled simply by his worship of the Lord. The actual devotee does not desire even liberation, anyabhilashita shunyam. The Lord, however, fulfills the desire of the devotee by awarding him opulence that will never be destroyed. A karmi's opulence is destroyed, but the opulence of a devotee is never destroyed. A devotee becomes more and more opulent as he increases his devotional service to the Lord. Text 75. The ultimate goal of all ambitions is to become a servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If an intelligent man serves the most dear Lord, who gives himself to his devotees, how can he desire material happiness, which is available even in hell? Purport. An intelligent man will never aspire to become a devotee to achieve material happiness. That is the test of a devotee. As Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches, Nadanam najanam nasundarim kavitam vadagadishya kamaye mama janmani janmanishware bhavatad bhakti rahai tuki twayi. O Almighty Lord, I have no desire to accumulate wealth, nor do I desire beautiful women, nor do I want any number of followers. I only want your causeless devotional service in my life, birth after birth. A pure devotee never begs the Lord for material happiness in the shape of riches, followers, a good wife, or even mukti. The Lord promises, however, yoga kshemam baham yaham. I voluntarily bring everything necessary for my service.
O my mother, O best of all women, I am a fool. Kindly excuse me for whatever offenses I have committed.
Your 49 sons have been born unhurt because of your devotional service. As an enemy, I cut them to pieces, but because of your great devotional service, they did not die. Sri Shukadeva Goswami continued, Diti was extremely satisfied by Indra's good behavior. Then Indra offered his respects to his aunt with profuse obeisances. And with her permission, he went away to the heavenly planets with his brothers, the Maruts. My dear King Parikshit, I have replied as far as possible to the questions you have asked me, especially in regard to this pure, auspicious narration about the Maruts. Now you may inquire further, and I shall explain more. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports to the 6th canto, 18th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled Diti Vows to Kill King Indra. Bravo. Bravissimo. Sadhu, sadhu. And that brings us to the cow break. We'll be back here at 5:20. Thank you very much. She should wash her teeth, bathe, and dress herself with white cloth and ornaments. And before taking breakfast, she should worship Lord Vishnu and Lakshmi. She should then pray to the Lord as follows. My dear Lord, you are full of all opulences, but I do not beg you for opulence. I simply offer my respectful obeisances unto you. You are the husband and master of Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune who has all opulences. Therefore, you are the master of all mystic yoga. I simply offer my obeisances unto you. Purport, a devotee knows how to appreciate the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Om Purnam Adak Purnamidam Purnat Purnam Udachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vishishyate. The Personality of Godhead is perfect and complete, and because He is completely perfect, all emanations from Him, such as this phenomenal world, are perfectly equipped as complete wholes. Whatever is produced to the complete whole is also complete in itself. Because He is the complete whole, even though so many complete units emanate from Him, He remains the complete balance. Therefore, to take shelter of the Supreme Lord is required. Whatever a devotee needs will be supplied by the complete Supreme Personality of Godhead. Tesham nityabdi yuktanam yogikshemam vahamyaham. Therefore, a pure devotee will not ask anything from the Lord. He simply offers the Lord his respectful obeisances, and the Lord is prepared to accept whatever the devotee can secure to worship Him, even patram, pushpam, palam, toyam, a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water. There is no need to artificially exert oneself. There is no need to artificially exert oneself. Apparently, I like that. It is better to be plain and simple and with respectful obeisances. Offer to the Lord whatever one can secure. The Lord is completely able to bless the devotee with all opulences. 5. Any reaction to the purport? You what? Relief. Any other reaction? Like? Super like? 5. O my Lord, because you are endowed with causeless mercy, all opulences, all prowess, and all glories, strength and transcendental qualities, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Master of everyone. Purport. In this verse, the words Tatosi Bhagavan Prabhu mean, therefore, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Master of everyone. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is endowed with all 6 opulences in full, and moreover, He is extremely kind to His devotee. Although He is full in Himself, He nonetheless wants all the living entities to surrender unto Him so that they may engage in His service. Thus He becomes satisfied. Although He is full in Himself, He nonetheless becomes pleased when His devotee offers Him patram pushpam palam toyam, a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water in devotion. Sometimes the Lord, as the child of Mother Yashoda, requests His devotee for some food, as if He were very hungry. Sometimes He tells His devotee in a dream that His temple and His garden are now very old and that He cannot enjoy them very nicely. Thus He requests the devotee to repair them. Sometimes He is buried in the earth
and as if unable to come out himself, he requests his devotee to rescue him. Sometimes he requests his devotee to preach his glories all over the world, although he alone is quite competent to perform this task. Even though the Supreme Personality of Godhead is endowed with all possessions and is self-sufficient, he depends on his devotees. Therefore, the relationship of the Lord with his devotees is extremely confidential. Only the devotee can perceive how the Lord, although full in himself, depends on his devotee for some particular work. This is explained in Bhagavad Gita 11:33, where the Lord tells Arjuna, Nimitta matram bhavasavyasachin. O Arjuna, merely be an instrument in the fight. Lord Krishna has the competence to win the battle of Kurukshetra, but nonetheless he induced his devotee Arjuna to fight and become the cause of victory. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was quite confident enough to spread his name and mission all over the world, but still he depended upon his devotee to do this work. Considering all these points, the most important aspect of the Supreme Lord's self-sufficiency is that he depends on his devotees. This is called his causeless mercy. The devotee who has perceived this causeless mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead by realization can understand the master and the servant.
Text 6. After profusely offering obeisances to Lord Vishnu, the devotee should offer respectful obeisances unto Mother Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, and pray as follows. O wife of Lord Vishnu, O internal energy of Lord Vishnu, you are as good as Lord Vishnu himself, for you have all of his qualities and opulences. O goddess of fortune, please be kind to me. O mother of the entire world, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Purport. The Lord has multifarious potencies. Parashya shaktir vividaiva shuyate. Since Mother Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, is the Lord's very precious potency, she is addressed here as Mahamaya. The word Maya means Shakti. Lord Vishnu, the Supreme, cannot exhibit his power everywhere without his principal energy. It is said, Shakti Shakti Man Abheda. The power and the powerful are identical. Therefore, Mother Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, is the constant companion of Lord Vishnu. They remain together constantly. One cannot keep Lakshmi in one's home without Lord Vishnu. To think that one can do so is very dangerous. To keep Lakshmi, or the riches of the Lord, without the service of the Lord, is always dangerous. For then Lakshmi becomes the illusory energy. With Lord Vishnu, however, Lakshmi is the spiritual. With Lord Vishnu, however, Lakshmi is the spiritual energy. 7. My Lord Vishnu, full of six opulences, you are the best of all enjoyers and the most powerful. O husband of Mother Lakshmi, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, who are accompanied by many associates, such as Vishwaksena. I offer all the paraphernalia for worshipping you. One should chant this mantra every day with great attention while worshipping Lord Vishnu with all paraphernalia, such as water for washing his feet, hands, and mouth, and water for his bath. One must offer him various presentations for his worship, such as garments, a sacred thread, ornaments, scents, flowers, incense, and lamps. Purport. This mantra is very important. Anyone engaged in deity worship should chant this mantra, as quoted above, beginning with Om Namo Bhagavate Mahapurushaya. Text 8. Sukadeva Goswami continued, after worshipping the Lord with all the paraphernalia mentioned above, one should chant the following mantra while offering 12 oblations of ghee on the sacred fire. Om Namo Bhagavate Mahapurushaya Mahavibhuti Pataye Swaha. Text 9. If one desires all opulences, his duty is to daily worship Lord Vishnu with his wife Lakshmi. With great devotion, one should worship him according to the above-mentioned process. Lord Vishnu and the goddess of fortune are an immensely powerful combination. They are the bestowers of all benedictions and the sources of all good fortune. Therefore, the duty of everyone is to worship Lakshmi Narayana. Purport. Lakshmi Narayana, Lord Vishnu, and Mother Lakshmi are always situated in everyone's heart. Ishwarak sarvabhutanam riddhisher junatishtati. However, because non-devotees do not realize that Lord Vishnu stays with his eternal consort, Lakshmi, within the hearts of all living entities, they are not endowed with the opulence of Lord Vishnu. Unscrupulous men sometimes address a poor man as Daridra Narayana, or poor Narayana. This is most unscientific. Lord Vishnu and Lakshmi are always situated in everyone's heart. But this does not mean that everyone is Narayana, especially not those in poverty. This is a most abominable term to use in connection with Narayana. Narayana never becomes poor, and therefore he can never be called Daridra Narayana. Narayana is certainly situated in everyone's heart, but he is neither poor nor rich. Only unscrupulous persons who do not know the opulence of Narayana try to afflict him with poverty. Text 10. One should offer obeisances unto the Lord with a mind humbled through devotion. While offering dandavats, by falling on the ground like a rod, one should chant the above mantra 10 times. Then one should chant the following prayer.
My Lord Vishnu and Mother Lakshmi, Goddess of Fortune, you are the proprietors of the entire creation. Indeed, you are the cause of the creation. Mother Lakshmi is extremely difficult to understand because she is so powerful that the jurisdiction of her power is difficult to overcome. Mother Lakshmi is represented in the material world as the external energy, but actually she is always the internal energy of the Lord. My Lord, you are the master of energy, and therefore you are the supreme person. You are sacrifice, yajna, personified. Lakshmi, the embodiment of spiritual activities, is the original form of worship offered unto you. You, my Lord, you are the master of energy, and therefore you are the supreme person. You are sacrifice personified. Lakshmi, the embodiment of spiritual activities, is the original form of worship offered unto you, whereas you are the enjoyer of all sacrifices. Mother Lakshmi, who is here, is the reservoir of all spiritual qualities, whereas you manifest and enjoy all these qualities. Indeed, you are actually the enjoyer of everything. You live as the supersoul of all living entities, and the Goddess of Fortune is the form of their bodies, senses, and minds. She also has a holy name and form, whereas you are the support of all such names and forms and the cause for their manifestation. Purport, Madhvacharya, the Acharya of the Tattvavadis, has described this verse in the following way. Vishnu is described as yajna, personified, and Mother Lakshmi is described as spiritual activities and the original form of worship. In fact, they represent spiritual activities and the supersoul of all yajna. Lord Vishnu is the supersoul even of Lakshmi Devi, but no one can be the supersoul of Lord Vishnu, for Lord Vishnu himself is the spiritual supersoul of everyone. According to Madhvacharya, there are two tattvas, or factors. One is independent, and the other is dependent. The first tattva is the Supreme Lord Vishnu, and the second is the Jiva tattva. Lakshmi Devi, being dependent on Lord Vishnu, is sometimes counted among the Jivas. The Gaudiya Vaishnavas, however, describe Lakshmi Devi in accordance with the following two verses from the Primeya Ratnavali of Baladibhusan. The first verse is a quotation from the Vishnu Purana. Nityaiva sa jagan mata Vishnur shrir anapayini yata sarva gato Vishnus tataiveyam dvijotama Vishnu syu shaktayas tisras tasu ya kirtita para saiva shrishtad abhinneti praha shishyan prabhur mahan. O best of the brahmanas, Lakshmiji
is the constant companion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, and therefore she is called Anapayini. She is the mother of all creation. As Lord Vishnu is all-pervading, his spiritual potency, Mother Lakshmi, is also all-pervading. Lord Vishnu has three principal potencies, internal, external, and marginal. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has accepted Parashakti, the spiritual energy of the Lord, as being identical with the Lord. Thus she is always included in the independent, thus she is also included in the independent Vishnu Tattva. In the Kanti Mala commentary on the Prameya Ratnavali, there is this statement: Nanu kvachit nityamukta jivatvam lakshmya svikritam tatraha praheti nityayaveti padye sarva vyapti katanena kala kashtyetyadi padya dvaye shudho pit yukta cha mahaprabhunna swashishyan prati lakshmya bhagavad advaitam upadishtam kvachit yat tasyastu dvaita muktam tattu tad avishta nitya mukta jivam adhaya sangatamastu. Although some authoritative Vaishnava disciplic successions count the goddess of fortune among the ever-liberated living entities, jivas, in Vaikuntha, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in accordance with the statement in the Vishnu Purana, has described Lakshmi as being identical with the Vishnu Tattva. The correct conclusion is that the descriptions of Lakshmi as being different from Vishnu are stated when an eternally liberated living entity is imbued with the quality of Lakshmi. They do not pertain to Mother Lakshmi, the eternal consort of Lord Vishnu. 14. You are both the supreme rulers and benedictors of the three worlds. Therefore, my Lord Uttama Shloka, may my ambitions be fulfilled by your grace. 15. Sri Shukadev Goswami continued, thus one should worship Lord Vishnu, who is known as Srinivasa, along with Mother Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, by offering prayers according to the process mentioned above. After removing all the paraphernalia of worship, one should offer them water to wash their hands and mouths, and then one should worship them again.
Thereafter, with devotion and humility, one should offer prayers to the Lord and Mother Lakshmi. Then one should smell the remnants of the food offered, and then again worship the Lord and Lakshmiji. 17. Accepting her husband as the representative of the Supreme Person, a wife should worship him with unalloyed devotion by offering him prasad. The husband, being very pleased with his wife, should engage himself in the affairs of his family. Purport. The family relationship of husband and wife should be established spiritually according to the process mentioned above. 18. Between the husband and wife, one person is sufficient to execute this devotional service. Because of their good relationship, both of them will enjoy the result. Therefore, if the wife is unable to execute this process, the husband should carefully do so, and the faithful wife will share the result. Purport. The relationship between the husband and wife is firmly established when the wife is faithful and the husband sincere. Even if the wife, being weaker, is unable to execute devotional service with her husband, if she is chaste and sincere, she shares half of her husband's activities. That's for other reasons.
Every combination of the invitation possible.
every combination of permutation is that we see in communities, don't we? That sometimes the husband's strong, sometimes the wife's strong, sometimes the kids are strong, the parents aren't, and they all help each other. Fitty fitty? Fitty sand.
Fitty fitty. Yeah. One should accept this Vishnu Vrata, which is a vow in devotional service, and should not deviate from its execution to engage in anything else. By offering the remnants of prasada, flower garland, sandalwood pulp, and ornaments, one should daily worship the brahmanas and worship women who peacefully live with their husbands. Must continue the following the regulative principles to worship Lord Vishnu with great devotion. Thereafter, Lord Vishnu should be laid in his bed, and then one should take prasad. In this way, husband and wife will be purified and will have all their desires fulfilled.
The chaste wife must perform such devotional service continuously for 1 year. After 1 year passes, she should fast on the full moon day in the month of Kartik, October, November. On the morning of the next day, one should wash oneself, and after worshiping Lord Krishna as before, one should cook as one cooks for festivals as stated in the Griha Sutras. Sweet rice should be cooked with ghee, and this preparation the husband should offer, and with this preparation the husband should offer oblations to the fire 12 times. Thereafter, he should satisfy the brahmanas. When the satisfied brahmanas bestow their blessings, he should devotedly offer them respectful obeisances with his head, and with their permission, he should take prasada. Before taking his meal, the husband must first seat the acharya comfortably, and along with his relatives and friends, should control his speech and offer prasada to the guru. Then the wife should eat the remnants of the oblation of sweet rice cooked with ghee. Eating the remnants ensures a learned, devoted son and all good fortune. If this vow or ritualistic ceremony is observed in accordance, if this vow or ritualistic ceremony is observed according to the description of Shastra, even in this life a man will be able to achieve all the benedictions he desires from the Lord. A wife who performs this ritualistic ceremony will surely receive good fortune, opulent sons, a long-living husband, a good reputation, and a good home. Purport. In Bengal even today, if a woman lives for a long time with her husband, she is considered very fortunate. A woman generally desires a good husband, good children, a good home, prosperity, opulence, and so on. As recommended in this verse, a woman will receive all these desirable benedictions, and a man will also be able to receive all benedictions from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, by performing this particular type of rut, a man and a woman in Krishna consciousness will be happy in the material world, and because of being Krishna conscious, they will be promoted to the spiritual world.
If an unmarried girl observes this vrata, she will be able to get a very good husband. If a woman who is avira, who has no husband or son, executes this ritualistic ceremony, she can be promoted to the spiritual world. A woman whose children have died after birth can get a child with a long duration of life and also become very fortunate in possessing wealth. If a woman is unfortunate, she will become fortunate, and if ugly, she will become beautiful. By observing this rut, a diseased man can gain relief from his disease and have an able body with which to work. If one recites this narration while offering oblations to the pitas and demigods, especially during the Shatha ceremony, the demigods and inhabitants of Pitriloka
will be extremely pleased with him and bestow upon him the fulfillment of all desires. After one performs this ritualistic ceremony, Lord Vishnu and his wife, Mother Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, are very pleased with him. O King Parikshit, now I have completely described how Diti performed this ceremony and had good children, the Maruts, and a happy life. I have tried to explain this to you as elaborately as possible. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 6th canto, 19th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Performing of the Pungsavana Ritualistic Ceremony. End of the 6th canto!
Wondering, is this ritual ceremony is practical in our days? Should we tell our wives to pursue this type of activity?
I mean, main thing is the tenets of.
Main thing is that the program that we have already in place is sufficient, more than sufficient. Not necessary to do. I mean, these are all. The main point of these is that, as I was saying the other night, even in our padatis, it's mentioned that grahasthas are doing all kinds of pujas, and because the names of the Supreme Personality of God are the Namanyanantasya Shankitaniyat, they're saying Janardana Namaha, Vishnu Namaha. That's why, you know, they have so much impact and so forth. Controlling the senses, doing the artiks, doing Harinam, Sankirtan, self-sufficient. Yes?
Is it like a karmakandic? Is this like a ritualistic karmakandic practice?
Well, there were certainly a lot of materialistic benedictions offered for people who have mindset, but ultimately it was meant to please Lakshmi and Narayan and attain, you know, pure devotional service. Prabhu?
Just an appreciation from this chapter, text 5. Srila Prabhupada talks about how the Lord appears to have needs that he can't fulfill himself. And then, Jai, Canto 7.
Seventh canto has entered the house.
And he says, how does he put it? I think he mentions himself in an oblique way. Oh, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was quite competent enough to spread his name and mission all over the world, but still he depended upon his devotee to do this work. I took that he's talking about himself. And I like that, and I also liked how he said, considering all these points, the most important aspect of the Supreme Lord's self-sufficiency is that he depends on his devotee. This is called his causeless mercy. The devotee who has perceived this causeless mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead by realization can understand the master and the servant.
It
it's the greatest opulence. There's another place where it states that this his giving the power and depending on his devotees to do things that he would know is his greatest opulence.
Well, just on that point, one name of Krishna is worth thousands of names of Vishnu. So our process, I mean, is so much more potent because of the power of Krishna. And also Krishna's mercy is so much greater, patram pushpam param toyam, as Srila Prabhupada mentions, that Krishna accepts such a simple offering, and when it's done with devotion, he accepts that offering and the devotee can be promoted to the spiritual world.
Question, if we can hear a little bit more on there is no need to artificially exert oneself. There was this, but I don't remember the verse.
I couldn't hear that.
There's no need to artificially exert oneself. Patram pushpam palam toyam. Simply offer a flower, fruit, and you'll be liberated. You'll no reason to artificially exert oneself.
With devotion.
Unnecessarily exert oneself.
Yeah. No need to artificially, but one should exert one. This whole month of Damodar, Parishramam and Krishna Kripa, you know, these two fingers, that the Lord's mercy is there when the devotee, as Mother Yashoda exemplified, makes a great effort, then Krishna's mercy becomes so much more potent.
Navina? Javi? Oh, Mahendra.
I just wanted to mention how I was impressed by the solution of Kashyapa. He was like in a predicament, what to do. He promised he cannot break the promise and at the same time cannot kill Indra. What to do? Bhakti. So bhakti is the solution to all predicaments and unsolvable situations.
Nice. I was thinking earlier also about how Chidraketu was cursed by Parvati, and it was an acceptable situation because he knew the result would be he would go back to Godhead. So I was thinking how, although we perform many, we give our lifetime to the practice of devotional service, such, still we need a lot of thrust to ultimately get out of the material world altogether. Despite the fact that he had attained perfection, there he was with the Vidyadharas, traveling around an airplane and so forth. And then the arrangement to actually extricate him finally from any kind of connection to the material world was this next birth as Vrajasura. I mean, it was a little bit tumultuous, to say the least. He ended up swallowing Indra, getting his head sawed off with a thunderbolt and so forth. But that was that's kind of indicative. When I heard it, it seemed the drama that it takes to actually get out of the material world finally, because it's so ingrained that, yeah, okay, devotional service, great, but I'll still stay here anyway, and, you know, maybe someday, some lifetime or whatever. And unless there's a grand arrangement that, you know, just like really blasts you off, like, okay, get on, you know, we're going now, that it's really hard to break out of the atmosphere finally and get home.
Thank you. In addition to that, it seems that, yeah, everything will go up in flames. And so here we have a good example of that. And for devotee, Krishna takes special interest. Prabhupada always took great, he had great realization of that verse. Harishita danam shanai. When Krishna takes special interest of a devotee, then he starts making the arrangements for bringing him closer. And for the mundaners, it looks like tragedy, defeat, complete confusion. But the devotee is not perturbed or phased by such. It's not pleasant, but he just has full faith that this is the Lord's plan for him, and he goes along with it.
I was impressed with
how deep the culture is, the Vedic culture, and how, especially towards the beginning of the universe, when all of these principles are being set up and all the personalities are interacting with one another, even in the most difficult of circumstances, you know, the cultural, spiritual cultural, you know, aspects win the day, you know. And even though we may not be able to duplicate that, the way it's being done here in Kali Yuga, but still the principle, you know, that at every turn there's some talk about how Vishnu is to be pleased, and you know, the goal of life is spiritual, and you know, despite all these other things that are going on, all this envy and cursing and counter-cursing and violence and whatever, but at the end of the day, everyone is coming together and saying, yeah, I mean, even look, you know, Aditi says, okay, I want to make a vow to kill Indra. And Indra's watching her while she's doing every little thing and waiting, and he's got a full mystic power. You know, he can figure it out. He doesn't have to send in a, you know, satellite from the sky to spy. And then at the end, when it was said and done, you know, even though she didn't get her thing fulfilled, and, you know, he was embarrassed in the way that he was, they both ended up being, they still were family members and loved one another, and it was incredible. It was incredible. So, you know, this just shows me that, you know, if you take the essence in all these things about women and this and that, but if the essence is there, if one's purpose in life is spiritual, and the purpose of a culture is spiritual, and everyone is together trying to get there, and then even if they don't always agree with one another, it just elevates the whole situation. And therefore, I was appreciating how the Bhagavatam, even though all these kinds of things are there, it ultimately shows how everything applied in Krishna consciousness results in all auspiciousness.
Can't we all just get along?
I was reflecting, this is something I thought about earlier in the canto, and I didn't mention it, but in the context of what you were saying about how and Narvita Prabhu also was saying about how the Lord then takes everything away, special mercy, and still we're so attached to this world. I was thinking about how after Indra got his thunderbolt weapon directly from the Lord, and he, the plan here, it's completely authorized by the Lord, still he attacks first with his club, his trusty club that he had so much faith in. He actually had more faith in his club than Vishnu's weapon. Vritrasura had to encourage him. Of course the club failed because it's just a club. That wasn't the plan. He's supposed to attack with the thunderbolt first. And it didn't work, and he gets knocked back 14 yards, and he's all morose, and Vritrasura has to give him a lecture.
Then he doesn't think that it's under.
Yeah, because he thinks that it's under his power, you know. Yeah. Anyway, I could see myself in that in so many ways, just doing the same old thing. And of course it doesn't work, because I'm not doing what Krishna's given me to do. And then somebody has to give me. Anyway, so I like that. I also just wanted to point out that we finished the sixth canto in 7 calendar days. So actually 6.5 if you take out the half day we were in Vrindavan. Just wanted to say, that's pretty cool.
Just saying. Nice points. Patri?
I am really impressed with the situation and how the strategy of preaching Angira Muni. Because don't give advice unless you're hired. When he was not ready, okay, you just get a son. You want, you're so stubborn, okay, get it. But when he was howling with open mouth, okay, this is the time now to give instructions because he's ready now to receive it. And when he came and then he didn't do it himself, don't give credit to others, you know. And this boy did it as a tape recorder on his behalf because he spoke to him and he accepted immediately. And it's interesting enough, after that he got the mantra. So, you know, Supreme Lord didn't give him spiritual world. He sent him to Vidyagara. I mean, to still enjoy for a long time. But because maybe some material desires were still there as a king. But at the end, he just created the situation to chip off all those final desires. But why, I have a small question. He said he changed the body straight away, or he had to complete his lifetime? Two times, when he became Chitraketu, so immediately, it is not mentioned, so he was living happily ever after, and then when he get new body, then he became Vidyadhara, and then that body finished, then he became Vritrasura, or he just dropped on the spot after curse. Any information?
Nice points. We'll look in, we'll see if anything's there in Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. It wasn't there in the text. Go ahead.
I really like these prayers by Chitraketu, talking about the relativity in between how happiness and distress, how the Lord is indifferent to both of them, and because they are both relative. And I was just thinking that so many people don't believe in God because all the suffering in the material world, and it really shows how much immaterial consciousness one is if one is thinking like this. Because similarly, one could think, well, why is there so much happiness in this world? In the sense that they're both concepts are kind of foreign to the soul. It's like the real joy of the soul is not material happiness. Still, we're so much kind of, you know, hankering and working hard to get it, depriving ourselves of the ananda, of the joy of devotional service. So I don't know if I explain myself.
Very well. It reminded me of that sentence that we caught on to where Prabhupada said that kama means desires that can never be fulfilled. He said that means lusty desire. I was thinking about his choice of words also, because fulfilled means that there's a sense of fulfillment once you reach what you're looking for. But that comma, I find that to be a good jumping off point to teach Krishna consciousness on the basis of what you're saying, that happiness and distress are within the mind. People can relate to these ideas about certain desires. There are a category of desires that can't be fulfilled because they're illusory, and they always stay outside our grasp. And if that's the case, then one might absolutely restrict oneself from going after those particular desires. In fact, Prabhupada said the same thing there. Once you categorize them and see that there are certain kinds of desires you can't fulfill anyway, then why would you pursue them? That's a beginning point for being very dedicated in the process of Krishna consciousness. If you have a Sayatmika boot here. Did you have a point?
Yes.
Okay.
Dushpurena nalainacha. Krishna says it in the Gita. Dushpurena nalainacha, the point you're making. That lust is never fulfilled. It burns like fire. And that means the more you put into it, the more it burns. It never goes out.
I was also very impressed by how everybody is playing everybody. Like the wife, she didn't reveal her mind. She had some hidden agenda, and then the husband was shocked. Like, hey, so she was manipulating him, but then he returned very nicely. You know, okay, well. And he applied his knowledge to trick her, but ultimately Krishna tricked everybody, so it was really like happy end. But this lack of straightforward honesty is like shocking sometimes. Even at that level of those are all devotees generally, the demigods and everything, and still. It's insane.
It is nice that they worked it out at the end, though. Because Indra came clean and he was honest. And he said, you know, I was here trying to kill your embryo. That's why I was here. I mean, she said, really, tell me, don't lie. You know, why were you here? And they had an open conversation. Yeah, it's very helpful to know that you can have that. Even if you go to such lengths to deceive somebody at the end, if both of you just are straightforward and you deal with the problem and you're honest,
then you can move forward. Is that bug zapper on right next to you, Javi Prabhu?
What is
that? Is the light on that bug zapper down below?
No.
Oh, got to turn it on. Just click it on there. These guys are coming alive here. Some Richardson. It is on? Okay. Thank you. Okay.
I was impressed by how Chitraketu responded when Mother Parvati cursed him. Like he could have, just for a small thing, you know, he was like, he got a curse to become a demon. I was thinking how, when sometimes even the intention is not to criticize or not to do anything wrong, how it comes about and how one responds to it, it was very nicely exemplified by Chitraketu.
Very interesting point. It reminded me too that there are things that come up in our life that we call providential. There seems to be an inordinate reaction to an incident. And you're like, how could that have ever happened? And how can I deal with it? And it's like, really, you can't. You just have to depend on Krishna. And those are things that are called providential. Prabhu?
And that applies to positive things, not just negative things.
Yeah, this was the example which Bhagavatam called a sadhu lakshana, how he reacted. This is the example.
Sadhu Lakshana.
Sadhu Lakshana, yeah.
That's a nice name, Sadhu Lakshana.
And I was impressed by a point related to Radhika's about the happiness and how Prabhupada, in one purport, explained that there is only misery and suffering in this world. Even the so-called happiness is actually misery. Mm. And then a little later, says that for a devotee, there is only happiness in this world. And even the so-called misery for the devotees is happiness only due to the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this is impressive.
Yes, interesting. Srila Prabhupada mentioning that greatness of the man can be understood by his ability to tolerate provocating situation. So that's such a character shown in Srimad Bhagavatam. They just didn't make it up. Okay, let me just become very nice, because everybody is looking at me. But in this situation, it explains two things, that sometimes it is saying that mother chastising the daughter in order to teach daughter-in-law. So sometimes by using his devotees, Krishna actually teaching all world the example, by chastising the daughter, because she will not run away. She is family member. So similarly, he chastises the devotee, unexpectedly to devotees even. Because when you're expecting something, you get prepare yourself, calm yourself, dress yourself. But when test comes unexpectedly, oops! So you have to react naturally from the heart. Because you cannot fake it until you make it. When it's happening automatically, so you have to manifest your own real face. So Chitraketu in this case, oops, I curse you. Oops, okay, thank you. His humility was rather natural. He's just not made up. As we know, this man.
Sadhu, sadhu. Nando.
When this is a Chanakya Pandita thing, he said some guy was speaking many languages, but nobody knew what is his real language. And then just throw and started to speak in his own language.
Patri Prabhu is the reservoir of all stories and dramas.
Yeah.
That's Hare Krishna. Nice.
I like the mood of the speaker of Maharaj Parikshit and Shukadev Goswami, because at the end of chapter 18, Shukadev Goswami says, "I've replied as far as possible to the questions you have asked me, especially in regard to this pure auspicious narration about the Maruts. Now you may inquire further and I shall explain more." So I just really like the mood that Maharaj Parikshit, he doesn't have anything else, nothing else is going on for him right now. He's like fully just like invested in hearing the Bhagavatam. Shukadev Goswami has such a taste for narrating, he just wants to keep speaking and speaking. And so there's this perfect atmosphere. The speaker and the listener are just so enthusiastic and no one's going anywhere because there's like, you know, everyone's going to stick around until the 7 days are up. And it's, you know, like Shukadev Goswami is not like, okay, I, you know, I, is it okay? Is that have I spoken enough? I'm kind of getting tired here. I'm getting thirsty and hungry. I kind of want to go home. But both of them are just like so enthusiastic. So it's really nice to hear that.
Nice point. Last point from Vaikuntha Nayaka Prabhu.
Could you please explain the point where it says that Chitraketu could curse Parvati, because Shiva and Parvati are not ordinary. They are also great devotees. Maya Devi is considered the devotee like this. So, and it's also mentioned that Shiva is just below, is not the Lord, but is above the living entities. So, I'm having difficulty in understanding how Chitraketu Maharaj could curse Parvati.
Are you looking in the commentaries? Just in context, it's that the pure devotee of the Lord has naturally all kinds of influence and mystic power and everything like that, because he's favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And it's all mentioned in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam that he has all these powers. He just doesn't use them because he's not interested in that. So, you know, this is a little back room, hard to find, hard to get to. You've got to come all the way to Govardhan to be in this place. It always reminds me of gamblers. Whenever they go to another city, you know, they'll get to Cincinnati and it's like, where's the game happening? And there's some game happening in some, you know, place where they knock on the door and it's like, what's the password? They let them in. And then they take them into a smoke-filled room in the back and they deal them out the cards. And, you know, people get addicted to gambling, and wherever they go, main thing they want to know, where's the game happening? And in the same way, the people, the devotees, like all of you, have become addicted to hearing and chanting. You look for that back room where the intense hearing and chanting is going on. And, you know, find out what's the password, how to get in. It took a lot of trouble for all of you to come here and to, you know, find a place. You're taking some inconvenience, sleeping on the floor, doing whatever you have to do to be in the game. And this is the real game. Where the Bhagavatam is being recited, and I like the point you made. There's nowhere else to go. There's not a mood here like it's 45 minutes and we got to get out of here. Of course, you know, we do have a schedule to keep because we still have to maintain. We're not our bodies, but we're in a body, and you know, but the full intention of all of the ablutions we're doing, the prasadam we're taking, is so we can come back in the room and continue to hear. And that peacefulness of mind is there, as you were pointing out, that we're not thinking of going somewhere else. This is the main thing. We're just thinking of going to the next verse, the next canto, and so forth. And I would say this is the most important of activities that one could do, possibly anywhere. In fact, Geshe Bharti Maharaj and I were, in 1974, we went to see Prabhupada. He was staying at Geshe Bharti Maharaj's house and a little apartment. He and Jayananda Prabhu lived together, and they'd fix it up before he'd come, before Prabhupada would come, and then they'd move out. We went up there, and we're sitting in front of Prabhupada for a darshan, and there was discussion going on about our Sankirtan activities. And the temple president was telling the scores to Prabhupada and everything like that. And Prabhupada, yeah, it was just the book distributors. So then Prabhupada looked right at us, and he said, "You must also read my books. I have not written these just for selling. I've written them for you to read, to become pure devotees, and go back to Godhead." And we felt it just like a thunderbolt going straight into our hearts. And it was very sustaining, because I remember many years in the 1970s and the 1980s when there were many parties that just... I remember hanging out with some traveling parties, and you know, they were saying, "We don't get any time to read." And I was saying, "That's crazy. Prabhupada personally told us to read his books." So I always like to think that as much effort as Prabhupada put into writing his books, we should put at least that much effort into reading them. The way Prabhupada was relentless in, you know, making his schedule tight
and getting stealing extra time. And he like consistently every day read or wrote something translated. On our side, we can't write so many books. Well, many of you can. I couldn't do it. But if, you know, Prabhupada did that much, we can do this side. And that's our relationship with him as the Acharya. Prabhu.
Sadhu, 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 sadhu.
I just would like to express my gratitude that we are able to feel that how you have taken that instruction to heart, you know, of reading Prabhupada's books. It's very contagious and it's really, you know, like helping me personally, I hope everybody else, to value Prabhupada's books and the reading of Prabhupada's books. So it's, we cannot repay, basically. And the fact that you are also extending, opening the doors for all of us, but you could do it on your own is... So thank you so much.
Kesha Bharti Maharaj built a house that all the hearers and chanters could live in.
Hare Krishna.
Yeah, I'd like to second what Radhika Nagarprabhu mentioned. To all the two of you and to all the devotees here in the room, because Sankirtan is the perfect yagya of the age, and it requires a little focus and concentration and a little austerity, but this is the right place, and by doing the parikramas and associating with the other devotees, you get that extra push. So thank you for allowing us to be here and taking part in that. We're decamping with your permission and blessings.
Thanks for being here. It always makes such a big difference, you and your team. We're really going to miss you. The energy always goes down after you leave. Naveena, thanks for everything. We'll lie in front of the car. And in closing...
We also have to leave.
You're not leaving either. Ashri, you can't leave.
Tomorrow morning. For the so, but we'll be back.
You'll be back?
One day.
Well, in closing, I'd like to quote Elvis. Say thank you. Thank you very much. Go Premanande.
Hari
Hari Bo. Nita Gora Hari Bo. Hari Bo. Hari Bo Nitai Go Bo Nitai Go Hari Bo Bo Hari Bo Nitai Go Hari Bo. Vanchakop Dhrvisha Kripas Nibeva Cha Patitanam Bhavani Bhyo Vaishnavi No No. Hey, Canto 7, starting tomorrow morning at 8:45 a.m.
Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, hey! Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman.